Okay, so let me remind you that last time we looked at this local toric threefold, which was of X, which was the total space of O by O K dV2. And we contracted the two exceptional curves in the zero section. So that gives us, and then smoothed out the singularity, so we obtained a family of three of non-compact threefolds, which were written as hypersurfaces in some toric variety Z. This total space O minus 1 plus O minus 2 over V2. And then the generic fiber here has two vanishing cycles, L1, L2, both of them topological, they're both spheres. And we wanted to play the geometric transition game in the sense that we wanted to look at Chern-Simons theory on these two spheres and compare that to the Gromov-Witten potential of X. And it didn't work very well because I argued last time we were missing some corrections predicted by Witten. And what I want to do now is try to sum up those corrections and, hopefully to show you that this works. So the algorithm for summing the corrections, so here we had two spheres. So in some sense, we want to sum the sum over corrections. It's really a sum over open swing maps, which are really like summing over open string maps. And the result of that sum, that's the sort of a new ingredient, a new feature of this model. The result of that sum is not a numerical series, as we are used to in numerical geometry, but it's really a series of corrections to Chern-Simons theory. So it's a series of, it's a formal series, it's a formal expansion in holonomy variables. So how is that going to be done? You have I'm going to assume that there is a moduli space of maps, open string maps, to Y with boundary in L, and topological, and so you specify a class, a relative class like this. L here denotes the union. And then we want, as we saw in the previous lectures, we want some construction for a virtual cycle. So we want to set up a good enumerative question. And then the essential ingredient in this approach is that we also want a T action, a torus action, on Y, which preserves L. And that induces a T action on the moduli space. So although all these elements are not rigorously constructed, I'm going to assume that something like that exists and try to produce a series of corrections using localization. With respect to the T action. So we saw that this approach before for open screen Gromov-Witten invariant. So what you have to do is first to classify fixed loci. And then you have a machine that allows you to assign to each fixed locus. So for each fixed locus, you can produce a number, if you want, denoted like this, which is not a rational number, which is a number in the field of fraction of the representation ring of T, which is just the local contribution. Just And in this particular case, we have to produce something else. And that is, we want to produce this number, but we also want to produce a monomial in holonomy variables, and also, an instanton factor, but that's rather trivial. It's just Q to minus the area. Okay, so. VIR. So that's the machine I want to go ahead and try to use in this example. So we pick up some torus action that preserves. The existence of this torus action in this example is very easy to see that there is such a torus action. So this torus action exists, and moreover, when you classify fixed loci, you have to start by you have to understand what is the image of the fixed loci. So each fixed map would map sigma, the domain, to Y, but there's going to be some fixed configuration of surfaces in Y, which are preserved by the torus action. So in this case, there is some technical analysis you have to do, but then the result is this, is that one finds, you find something like this. You find the two disks, D1 and D2, with boundaries on L1 and L2. Then you find a holomorphic cylinder with boundaries on L1 and L2. And what happens is that the boundaries are form Hopf links. So here, my drawing is not very accurate, but what I want to say, we get the Hopf link. So it's really a link, the simplest type of link. It's a link with two unknown components. Okay, so that's, so these are surfaces, they're all, surfaces in Y with boundary on L preserved by T. You can show that this is everything you have. Okay, so now any map, any fixed map, if this is a fixed map, it will have to map the domain to this configuration somehow. So that allows you to classify all the possible fixed loci quite easily, in fact. Okay, so classification. So it's the simple type. Well, you have the following types of fixed maps. So you have fixed maps. So you could have, the domain could be a cylinder, sigma 0, 2, which is mapped to the cylinder we had there, D21. And of course, locally, this map has to be of the form, Z equals T to the D. So that's one possible fixed map. And so these are all maps that map to the cylinder. And then you have maps that map to these two disks, the configuration of the two disks. And those are the generic form of such a map. You have a closed component, sigma naught, and the number of this component attached to it, delta 1, 1 up to delta 1, h1, and then delta 2, 1 up to delta 2, h2. And the map would just collapse I've collapsed the closed component to a point, to the common origin of these two disks. And each of these components would be mapped to the image disk with some degrees. So we're going to have degrees here, n1 up to nh1, m1 up to nh2. So that's the generic form of the map. And you also have some special cases, for which are quite easy to see. I mean, you have special cases of this following form. You have the domain can be a nodal disk like this, mapping here and there. Degrees D1 and D2, and so on. You can classify all the possible special cases. So now, if given, once you know the fixed loci, you know that the fixed loci look like this, you can apply. Now we know. I explained in the second lecture. I explained how to compute the local contribution using essentially the tangent obstruction complex for this map. So I'm not going to repeat that computation here because it's entirely analogous. So all you have to do is you have to use the tangent obstruction complex in order to evaluate CGH of psi for each psi. And I should tell you the answer for the cylinder is very easy. So in other words, I should probably have another index on this, which is the class where let me leave it like this. So for the cylinder, for this map, one finds very easily that you get a very easy answer. Is the 4 minus 1 to the d over d, if it's a map with 1. And that's independent of the torus weight. Now, these are more complicated. But again, if you crank the machinery up, you're going to find that for this locus, you get an expression that I'm going to just write schematically. It's going to be a product of disk factors, and then an integral over the moduli space MGH, the moduli space of closed surfaces, of essentially what you have here.
So
it's MGH. H is the number of disks. So you see, this surface collapses to a point, but this is really a marked surface because you have to mark the points where you attach the disks. So you get the whole fixed locus is isomorphic to a finite quotient of this space. The finite quotient was just going to give you some 1 over ought, the order of ought here. So, and that's, and you're left in an integral over MGH. So here you get a Mumford class, as we explained a couple of times. I call this point P. And then I have a product of minus psi plus can write it explicitly, I guess. The product over I minus psi I minus 1 over ni et of Tp to D1, product over J minus psi J minus 1 over Mj et Tp to D2. All this is in the denominator. So that's the type of integrals you get. And then there are some analogous expressions for the special loci, which are quite easy to work out, because the fixed locus is just a point. OK, so that's you have to do this for all fixed loci. And in the end, you have to come up with a series of corrections to Chern-Simons theory that looks like this. So it's going to look like, I'm going to call it, so in other words, the full action of the open string theory is going to be some S of A, it's S times Simons of A, plus something I'm going to call S inst, which is the sum of open string maps, open string instantons. So these are open string instanton corrections. And these things are quite complicated because you have to sum over everything we listed up there. So that means this is a sum. Oh, sorry. I didn't explain how to compute the other factors. Sorry about that. So, but that's relatively easy because what's going to happen is that, I'm sorry, so I forgot how to, all right, so you can, okay, so you get here, I'm going to call U1 and U2 the holonomy of the connections around the boundaries of the cylinder, and V1 and V2 holonomy of the connection around the boundaries of the disks. So that's going to be easy because this is going to come up with a factor of the form trace U1 to the D, trace U2 to the D. And this guy here is going to come up with a product of all, so it's product I equals 1 to H1, trace V1 to the N I, J equals 1 to H2, trace V2 to the MJ. And finally, you have an instanton factor, which here is looks like Q cylinder to the D. And here I get Q, say D1 to some degree. Well, that's not, well, okay. Q1 to some D1, Q2, D2. So in which D1 is just the sum of Ni, I equals 1 to H1, and D2 is sum over I equals J equals 1, H2 and J. So it's a very natural construction. You just have to pay attention to degrees and so on. So you have to sum over all these things. So then this is going to give you an expression of the following form. It's a sum of all G and H. Okay, and then it's a sum over, well, all relative classes, essentially. So now for each of these things, you get GS to G minus 2 plus H, and then you sum over all fixed loci in MGH YL beta. And the expression you have there is this local contribution. Then the instanton factors and the holonomy factors. So that's the way we build up this series of corrections. So now I think showed you how to build up how to construct each element in the sum. It's a pretty complicated expression in general, as you can see. Okay, so. So what's the plan? Now the plan is once we got this, we have to compute the free energy.
Strictly speaking, this is concept, right? In principle, like you're derived from the string filtering, or did you derive it?
Well, that's basically.
This is topological open string.
This is topological.
String field theory is a topological.
Yes. Well, that's basically what Ed told us to do in words. It's an incarnation of, except that he didn't tell us to work with equivariant count and so on. But I don't. That's.
Well, I could ask about you're adding a bunch of operators.
Yeah. Yeah.
I could ask about contact terms between those operators.
Okay.
I could ask about redefinitions of space coupling.
Yeah, you could. Okay, so fine. No,
these are rather non-local.
They are non-local, sure.
Correction.
Sure, they are non-local, yeah.
Yeah. I have a question. In that picture, you made a point of noting that the endpoints were linked.
Yeah.
Does that have any significance in the formula you write down? I mean, where does that
Yeah. In up there, yeah. So it's because it's this particular form of this expression. It does matter. It's important. Yeah. So it's just these coefficients would depend. I mean, it's encoded here. When you start evaluating the local contributions. Yeah, it's actually very important, and we'll see why. We'll see more about this.
You're saying that will show up when you go to reality later, but it's not a priori. I don't see it a priori in this expression.
No, that's not special. What I'm saying, which link? Oh, you mean the link here?
Yeah.
This link.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misunderstood. It's of course important on the next step. I'm sorry. So this is not about these coefficients. I misunderstood your question. So if the link here is going to be important because you need to evaluate the expectation values of those operators in Jean-Simon's theory, right? So now it's going to be important to know what kind of link you have here because you need to. Yeah. So of course. It would be different if this were completely disjoint, unlinked nodes. I mean, it would be another, it would be just different. All right, so this is the plan. Now, as I explained before, you have to just compute the free energy of all this theory with these corrections inserted. And that's, I explained how to do that for a very simplified model, a single disk last time. And now this is just, it's more of the same, but it's much more complicated. So you really want to compute this open string generating functional. It depends on these factors, but it also depends on Jean-Simon's quantities. And this is just going to look like log of the Jean-Simon's invariant for the two cycles. And then you have finally a correction. It's a log of the expectation value of all this. So you have, this is really the interesting part. So now this is a complicated computation. You have to exponentiate this series of corrections and compute the expectation values in Jean-Simon's theory. So this is quite involved. Okay, so that's sort of the plan. Now, in order to do that, there are a couple of important points. I can't do that explicitly on the blackboard, but there is something important we have to notice. Yeah, sure. Sure. So, the levels. And in the end, you actually need, you want to evaluate all this at kappa 1 equals kappa 2 equals GS. Yes, it is important. Yeah. I'm sorry? The right hand side? What's.
You're hiding a parameter corresponding to the Torah function?
Yes, it's hidden. It's there in here. The weights of the Torah section. So, yeah, this is the point I was going to make now. That before we start computing, we have to think a little bit what we have and what's going on. So there are two important aspects. So one important aspect is that these coefficients here are not rational numbers or real numbers. They're just Well, they really depend on the torus action. And then there's something else. In order to actually perform this computation, I need framing. I need to specify. Framing variables for all these four knots or boundaries. Because otherwise you can't evaluate this expression in Chern-Simons theory. So that's what you need to do. You have to specify the framing, and you have this weird thing that the coefficients are not really rational numbers. So now, if you come to think a little bit, what you want to do in the end is Lagrangian duality tells you that once you did that correctly, you should recover the Gromov-Witten potential of X, of the result of the resolution X. And that expression doesn't have any, it doesn't depend on torus actions. It doesn't depend on arbitrary choices of framing. It doesn't have ambiguities like that. So the question is, how can that possibly work? And it turns out that this is an exotic situation, so the answer is equally exotic. It's quite interesting. What happens is that there is a choice of framing. There is a choice of framing. But the framing, it's formal, because the framing variables, so let me denote them by so all these framing variables would be actually functions of the torus weights. So that's a very weird thing to do in Chern-Simons theory. I mean, usually framing has to be an integer. What I claim now is that, in fact, what you have to think of this, of all these Chern-Simons computations as some formal expansion in framing variables, and then evaluate those formal expressions at some functions of torus weights. So this is a well-defined procedure, because, in fact, this expression can be, can be expanded as power series in the framing variables. And it's just, I'm working formally, so you just expand on some functions of torus weights. And the way you find these functions are very natural. These are really, it's really the same prescription that Sheldon and Melissa did, but interpreted a little bit differently. So I can describe that for you, how you find these framing variables. So the key aspect is that if you pick one of these cycles, L1, say, the sphere L1, it's locally described in some affine toric coordinates by an equation like this. So the two disks, for example, can be taken to be they are oriented along the axis, so you can take you can have a disk D1, which is, so we had, sorry, not a disk, but I mean, okay, here you have two knots meeting here, and the two knots, so the circles here, you can parameterize the circles by, so the circles, so what I'm trying to say is that this is really an algebraic knot. It's an algebraic link. So this is locally isomorphic to a situation that's more familiar. For example, you can have an S3 embedded in C2 coordinates Z1. So locally, this link is really like intersecting the sphere with with the singularity z1, z2 equals 0. So that gives you an algebraic ring. And then the torus action. So the torus action would... We have some local form. And the framing, it's very natural. You're going to pick up the framing. The framing variables would be Q1. Would be something like this really follows, if you think about it, it's really like it's taking the prescription that Sheldon and Melissa gave in their paper, but now in their paper they tried to make the framing, they picked up the framing to be an integer number, and that determined a very special set of torus weights. What I'm doing here, it's rather opposite. I am determining the framing to be whatever it has to be as a function of arbitrary torus weights. So it's a purely formal expression. So you make this choice for each sphere, and you know, once you make this choice, it's quite remarkable. What happens is that when you go in and compute this expression, the weight dependence completely goes away. It's very intriguing, because the weight dependence, these coefficients are very complicated dependence on the torus weights. The framing, well, this dependence is simple, but you know, you have to expand all knot invariants in power series of that thing. And in the end, with this choice, you get the torus weight dependence drops off. This is very, you know, in spirit, I'm going to say more about this, more precise things about this next time. But you have to keep in mind that in the computation of Gromov-Witten invariants on X, we have an equally interesting phenomenon. If you do this computation by localization on X, each Gromov-Witten invariant is a sum of a fixed loci, and again, the sum of the local contributions in that case are also complicated functions of torus weights. When you add everything up, the weight dependence goes away. Now, this is a very analogous phenomenon, but it's in this open string context. So in some sense, this points out that there is a very close relation between the computation I'm doing here and localization on the closed string side. And we are going to analyze more of that next time.
Is this a theorem or an observation?
That's an observation. It's not a theorem.
I mean, did you actually prove it for all the terms?
No. It's an experimental observation.
So you expand it out to the first...
Yeah, I expand it until
mathematical.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So now you see that this is
You just
can you explain it in terms of anomaly cancellation? Because the torus weights are charges of fields in a linear single hop. And I thought the framing dependence was related to anomaly. So it sounds like it.
Never thought about this in terms of the linear sigma model.
But the torus weights should be thought of as charges of field.
This is not the gauge group of the linear sigma model. This is a global torus action. This is a global symmetry. It's a global torus action. Yeah, sure. Sure.
No.
All I know, it works. But I don't have a derivation of it. I'm not even at the physical level. Actually, yeah, the physics question is very interesting. Why does the dependence go away?
I have a nice question. In the closed case, we don't have to rely on the dependence going away. But if the dependence on the weights didn't go away, we could just take the limit where...
No. In that case, it's guaranteed to go away, because that's it's a better computation. It's a better...
I thought the way these localization calculations work is that you go to the... you use the torus action over here in case, but then there's a limit you can take back with an undo regarding.
No. But if no, you have a well-defined geometric setup before defining your torus action. So you're guaranteed to get a.
Right, but then you go to the superiority and set up.
It's just a computational tool. You're guaranteed to get a numerical answer in that case. Because the computation is set up that way. You have a well-defined moduli space compact, have a well-defined virtual cycle, and those things are not. Their construction is not dependent, doesn't depend on the on any torus action. Your torus action is just an added afterwards. Here, this construction, I don't even know how to construct all these things without the torus action. So that's why it's much more mysterious than what happens there. Yes, but if you don't use a torus action, I don't know how to write these corrections.
No, I understand we don't have to write them.
No, so this is.
Well, they exist. No?
Sure, they should exist. So what I'm saying is that probably we should find a better way of writing them. And this points out that there is some other machine that we don't know yet. I'm not saying this is the last word. I mean, it's just probably there is some other machine we don't know that's going to do this better. But that's the stage that. Yeah, that's my current understanding of this. Well, yeah, there could be anomaly. Well, in principle, I guess there could be anomaly. Into the action. What enters the action is the lambdas, because it enters in this coefficient c.
No, I mean the
worldsheet action. Oh, I didn't think about the worldsheet action. I'm sorry. Okay. Anyway, this is what seems to happen, and it works. Okay. Now, in this case, just two. You have a global torus action. Which you can. No, but there has to be. Look, I mean, these things were. When I compute, these things are just, you know, you compute them using these enumerative techniques, and they come out to be whatever they are as functions of the lambdas. Now, you see, the cancellation takes, it's a very, very high, it's a highly non-trivial cancellation, because then they cancel against some Chern-Simons computation that you're doing afterwards. So, it's like, you know, but I can discuss, well, in the next lecture, I'm going to try to say more about this, although I do have only a limited understanding whatsoever, but, anyway, so that's the story, so, and then if you really do the computation with patience, the dependence goes away, and in fact you do get an agreement, a perfect agreement with the Gromov-Witten potential of the blow-up space. Now, so one more point I could make about this is that, in fact, well, that's an interesting phenomenon. One can actually simplify life considerably if you make a clever choice of the torus action. Because this computation is extremely complicated. If you make a nice choice, we saw this phenomenon in the closed ring in the derivation of the Faber-Pandari-Pande formula. In that case, making a nice choice of a torus action made a big difference. And in this case, this is also true. Because you can. You can choose, can make a special, well, yeah, so if you make a clever choice of torus weight action, then your formula looks much better. it's going to look something like this. There won't be any dependence of torus action. So you fix them, you make a clever choice, you get a compact, a much more manageable formula. And with this choice, the framing variables will take values, funny values, but still. Definite values. And now your computation is much easier. And you can go further and we did this computation up to degree 4 in cohomology class, in the hyperplane class, and we found a precise agreement with what's that? Oh, just because I forgot to write it. Which that's really a horrible thing. Yeah, okay. Yeah, so you can do the computation and you actually get a precise agreement with the Gromov-Witten potential of x. To the extent that you know the terms. Sure.
Or is this a theorem?
No, there is no theorem here. Okay. I don't even have a rigorous definition. So.
How many terms are you comparing?
We compared. I have a formula I can show you, but I this is something that I have to use the projector for.
Just how many?
I don't know that many. I can show you how many. And in fact, you can't actually check all of them because not all Gromov-Witten invariants of X are known. So you get interesting predictions. So if you want, you can turn the tables around and conjecture that this Chern-Simon system computes all the Gromov-Witten invariants of. And in fact, that's. So far it worked. I mean, I don't know any failure of this. Maybe I can. No, not that many because the computation is really complicated. I should.
The answer isn't just that it's a full transform.
No, that's all the terms we compute. What? Well, you can.
All of these.
No, that's the genus 0 and genus 1 parts in there. Never mind, we can talk later. We can talk later. I never counted how many terms agree. I know that genus 0 answer agreed, and genus 1 answer agreed to the whatever. Okay, so.
So I believe that V1 and V2 are the holomorphs that say about these particular, there's sort of particular circles that all the holomorphic disks end on? Or
yes, they are particular because they are selected by the torus action. Because when I do this, that's why I can write this correction. Because once I choose the torus action, these are the only surfaces which are preserved, left invariant. So I specify precise configuration of surfaces and precise configuration of knots here. That's why the torus action is useful. Because if you don't have that, then these things can move around, and you don't really know which, you don't really know how to write your corrections. That's the problem. So another way of doing this, well, I have no idea how to do it. I can imagine, though, you could perhaps try to perturb the complex structure to a nearby almost complex structure and do the symplectic thing, and you can isolate the contributions. I don't know how to do that. Maybe that's a better way, but okay, so anyway, so that's the story for the for this point. I should say now that you can do this for other geometries, and there is related work done by Nina Akanagic, Malinio Bafa, Amer Iqbal, and Amer Iqbal and Kashani Pook, all for various toric geometries, and using Chern-Simon systems, they managed to compute topological amplitudes in the same spirit as this. Okay, so that's pretty much what I wanted to say about the local model. I'm going to say more tomorrow. We're going to try to learn some lessons from this. But before that, I would like to discuss briefly, well, maybe not so briefly, but I'd like to discuss a transition between compact Calabi-Yau threefolds, because that's how, to see how far you can push this correspondence, or how far you can actually push this thing. And my claim is that you can, it can be some version of this works for some class of Calabi-Yau, compact Calabi-Yau hypersurfaces, and that's what I want to discuss next. I'm not going to finish today, but okay, so I'll discuss. So this is joint work with Bogdan Florian. So as I said before, we just decided to investigate how far this correspondence goes. And we decided to look at Calabi-Yau hypersurfaces in toric varieties. And I should say from the beginning that we don't understand this story for general transitions. So the setup is this. So you look at extremal transitions. So you have a family, a one-parameter family of hypersurfaces in some toric variety Z, which degenerates to a hypersurface with isolated ODPs. Okay, and now I'm looking at cases when there is some simultaneous resolution, there is a Crepont resolution. So this is another Calabi-Yau, a smooth Calabi-Yau threefold, which is in, is embedded in some toric variety Z twiddle. And the cases I'm interested in is when this resolution is actually induced by a blow up of the ambient space. So I have a, this is really a blow up. It's a blow up of Z along a surface. We're going to see examples in a minute. So both Z and Z twiddle are smooth toric varieties, and this is how the transition is realized.
So it's a toroidal wall?
Yeah. So, now, I should point out from the beginning that there are restrictions, even on this class of transitions, there are restrictions, and they are important. So first of all, I need to make one assumption, namely the ODPs of Y naught are fixed points under T action on Z. So I'm really looking at transitions, everything is toric, so that the nodal points of Y naught really sit at fixed points on Z. And then the other thing, it's not an assumption, but the only thing that we know how to do so far, it's really to test the genus zero partition functions. And the main obstructions to going to higher genus, in fact, it's related even to the closed string situation, because higher genus localization is not understood at this point for Kolobians or for hypersurfaces. So even for closed strings, we don't quite understand higher genus in this setup. Okay, so that's what I'm going to do. So the example I had in mind is, just to fix ideas, it's good to have an example. You look at a particular, vector Z to be again a projective bundle. It's a projective bundle of this form. Over P1 times P1, and you pick up Y mu to be a one-parameter family of anti-canonical divisors. MZ. And I can write down a more precise formula. The interesting, so y mu is going to look like this. Okay, plus some fixed terms. I'm not going to write explicitly because. So these are some fixed generic terms. So that's an example of this. The interesting, what I mean fixed, they don't depend on mu. They're just, so the interesting coefficient is here. So when mu goes to zero, you find that y zero has exactly two nodes. And They are fixed under the toric section. They because you can, they are really intersections of toric. So they are, yeah, intersections of toric divisors. Okay. So now the resolution of this. The way we construct this diagram here, it's quite straightforward. You have to take Z twiddle to be a blow up of Z along a section. Along the section E equals V equals zero. Oh, I should have said UV. UV and W are coordinates, homogeneous coordinates on the fibers. So you blow up Z along this section. Okay, so basically what's going to happen is that before you had Z was a bundle of projective spaces over F naught, and that becomes, after the blow up, a bundle of feasible surfaces F1. And F naught over F naught. So that's how, that's Z. That's it. Okay, so now this is the setup. We like to play in the same game in this setup. So how are we going to do that? I'm going to just explain the main ingredients and leave the details for next time. So what are we going to do? Well, first of all, one notice is that, again, we have two vanishing cycles on Y mu in the same homology class. Okay, and one would like we'd like to again construct an open string Cartesian function for y mu L1 and L2. So I'm going to wrap. Now this is actually quite interesting from the physical point of view, because what's going to happen here is that I will have to wrap n vibranes on L1, and I'm going to have to wrap n empty vibranes on L2. But this is a compact situation, so the total charge has to be zero. So now for this system, I'd like to construct this open string partition function. In a physical theory, yeah.
So do you still have a topological?
Why not? I claim I still have at least topological amplitude.
Space-time
supersymmetry. Yeah. Well. So, okay, so that's the system. So now, if you remember our list of what our algorithm is, we need a moduli space, we need a virtual cycle, and the third item on the list was a T-action. And that really is bad news in this case, because if you have a generic hypersurface y mu in Z, so the problem is a generic y mu does not admit a torus action. So that's really a new problem we have to face. First problem we have to face in this setup. There is no such action. So given what I said so far, everything was really, you know, relied very heavily on such an action. It was very equivariant. Now, it seems that you can't do much in this case. But in fact, turns out there is a way of bypassing this problem. So the solution seems, well, we found that the solution was to, you have to consider, if you want, what I would call the toric degeneration. Maybe that's not a good word, just a degeneration of y mu. I'm going to call y mu degenerate. So you degenerate, a generic y mu doesn't do the job, but you can degenerate y mu. Y mu degenerate could be something singular, of course. I erased the equation, but never mind. It looks like this. So I degenerate y mu to something like this. This is a, as you can see, something quite, it's reducible and non-reduced as a divisor with multiplicity 2. But in any case, what the plan is to actually and to work with such a degenerate hypersurface, because this does admit not these torus actions, but torus actions. And moreover, what one can do is one can follow the cycles L1 and L2 in this limit. So one can understand how the cycles L1 and L2 specialize in this limit. And the answer is very simple. Because let me call this hypersurface here Y bar. So I claim that L1 and L2 on generic Y mu specialize to L1 bar and L2 bar on in this component, in the component Y bar. And they have nice cycles. So you can find nice representatives, which again locally look like our favorite example so far. So locally they look like this. And the T action preserves. L1 and L2 bar. So at that point, at this point, we seem that we were out of business. At this point, we're trying to get back in business. And the way to do that is to generate Y, find the torus action, and try to, again, apply the same string of arguments. But I'm going to outline the process next time, because it's a good point to stop. And the plan would be just to start looking at open string maps to this. Naively, would like to look at open string maps to this singular thing, which is really complicated. But in fact, what's going to happen is that we are going to build up our action in terms of open string maps to the ambient space. So there is an approach like that I'm going to outline next time. So we're going to look at really like open string maps to Z with boundary condition on L1 bar and L2 bar. And the final claim will be that we can construct a generating functional for this kind of actions, and we can test the Lagrangian duality at genus 0. I'm going to discuss that next time. I'm going to just outline the main steps because the thing is complicated. And also, what I plan to do next time is to discuss some further developments following from Lagrangian duality, this topological vertex story that the recent development. And I'd like to discuss the interpretation of topological vertex in this context, in the context of localization. Okay. Stop here.